Morning, colleague. I am a minister for my honorable Makubela to speak.
Thank you. Can I please have a second message to the mention of Mr. Makubela? Yes, sir, Mr. Makubela.
Morning, morning, Gigi. Apologies for arriving late. I have formally seconded the proposal that was made by Honorable
Okay, thank you, Mr. Makubela. Any objections to the nomination of Mr. Makubela? Okay.
Am I allowed?
No. objections. Okay. Mr. Makubela, you can now come next to me and run the meeting.
Morning, colleagues, DG, departmental officials, and Ms. Mangaliso members, and everybody in the house. You will bear with us that we're starting about 25 minutes late. It's not in our own making or creation. It has to do with Fridays. Fridays are always a difficult. And in as much as it's a working day, but it always has got its own challenges. Amongst other things, most provinces have got their state of the province addresses. There are other competing challenges and so on. We do know that today's engagement with you, it's not a major one wherein we're going to engage in voting like kind of things or taking major decisions. However, it's a necessary one insofar as our doing oversight over the department and its entities is concerned. We do take this work very seriously. It should not, Mr. Salomis indicate, or did it should not in any way indicate the committee's lack of seriousness in terms of how we engage with you. You will know that even previously we did have engagements with you on Fridays, and we try to be here as many as we can. Part of our challenge today is that we've got quite a number of our members off sick. Yes, the committee that has got many members who are sick at one point or the other, but this time around it has gotten worse. With even members of the opposition having fallen sick. We are not having any of them today here. And so on, which is a challenge. And the chairperson making other commitments. So I have to take over, as you can now see. That is simply to indicate that ourselves and the public should understand the predicament that the committee has this morning. Those who were with us during the week, and particularly on Tuesday, would know that I myself wasn't well. I had to leave the meeting in between, before the end of that meeting. But fortunately, today I am better, so I'm able to preside over this meeting. And I'm not actually raising anything beforehand for any kind of weakness, but I'm just saying it's an objective reality that we are facing. That having been said, let me not just assume, but I know that faces that I have are quite familiar. But let me not just assume that they know each other. Just allow the process of introductions quickly to unfold. I may repeat that I am Silence Makubele, or Zondi Silence Makubele. May I allow members to introduce themselves, from there move over to the DG and departmental officials, move over to Mr. Salomis Andrew, together with your members that are accompanying you, and any other members either from the media or whoever may be in the room, to introduce themselves, just so that we know who is in here and take it from there. Honourable members.
Good morning, DG. Good morning, colleagues again. My name is Helen Bukushoki Kana, serving on the Environment Committee.
Good morning. My name is Godfrey Ntsane, Language Services Alum.
I thought they are a new MP now. Okay, thanks. My name is Patrick. My surname is Mabibo. I'm from the Northern Cape, and I'm representing the ruling party, the African National Congress. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, honorable members, and thank you for having us this morning. I'm not sure from where, the Director General for the Department of Environmental Affairs. And to my right,
DG
will introduce
you, sir. Thank you very much. My name is Shoni Mjeti. I'm the DG for Environment and Conservation.
Morning, members. Andrew Zalumis, CEO, Issy Manganiso, and I'll pass it to my left.
Morning, honourable members, DG colleagues. My name is Terry Cassis. I'm the business director of Issy Manganiso.
Good morning, honourable members, DG. My name is Abida. I'm the CEO for Issy Manganiso.
Good morning, honourable members. I'm Thabo Humumu from the Department of Environmental Affairs, dealing with World Heritage Management.
Good morning, members. I'm Boiswa, Parliamentary Officer, Department.
Good morning, honourable members. I'm Duong Zweni Sang from the Department of Environmental Affairs.
Thank you.
Good morning, honourable members. My name is Aisha Michael from Environmental Affairs.
Good morning, honourable members. My name is Asman Saim from the Ministry of Environmental Affairs.
Morning, members. I'm Monique from PNG.
My name is Scott Watts. I'm parliamentary staff attached to this committee.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Darren, committee assistant for environmental affairs.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Tanya Kleiner. I'm 60 to the chairperson.
Good morning, everybody. Once more, I'm here to talk to my other committee for task. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Hope our memories will serve us well, that if it comes to a push that we have to address each other or one another by name, so we'll have to do so without fail. Colleagues, we here in the main to receive the second and third quarter account from Ismagaliso. We have done so with the department, although we did not conclude the business, and we're doing that on the first. We have done so with the other entities, and today it's Ismangaliso's time. We hope that as you give us that account, amongst other things, you will touch on issues that we might have come across during our visit to your institution the other time of choice at the end of the year. We know there were thorny or teething issues that needed some resolution. They are not easy issues, but we hope there's progress in terms of how you hope to resolve some of those challenges. It's an entity that we know that is doing fairly well. There's not as major challenges in terms of managing resources and in terms of many other aspects that we have to account upon. But it's a matter that we cannot just take it for granted that everything is well without interacting with you and having to do the actual oversight over you. You know, as much as we know right from the department is well run, well managed, its entities and so on, but it remains our responsibility as members of parliament on behalf of the South African public to have to verify and check from time to time what is it that is happening, so that we keep our hands on the pulse, on the heartbeat of what is going on in the department and its entities as we are sitting here. So it is in no way a waste of time. It's a must to do kind of an exercise, and let's all treat it that way. Even as we engage you in terms of questioning time, we need to explain a bit more. It's not that we are trying to be hard on you. It's only that we are doing our bit. If we don't do that, you are likely as well to relax and just move along as if things are fine. You know that, and remain in your comfort zones. So if we shake you a little bit, it's just so that you are awake from time to time and conscious of your actions and whatever you do, so that you don't sleep easily on some of the things. So right away, without further ado, let me allow you, DG, if you have got remarks to make before either the business director or the CEO of the entity take us through the presentation, emphasizing more on those of the issues that we really would like to hear and which are critical in the running of the entity. Thank you very much. Over to DG.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Honourable Members. I have no opening remarks, but be ready to respond to questions after the presentation. So I do hand over to Terry, the Business Director, to take us through the presentation.
Thanks.
I'm going to run through the presentation, and our CEO will talk to the issues that were raised during the visit, and he'll talk to those and he'll summarize the actions have been taken in the interim. If we start with the first slide, the park vision is to create Africa's greatest conservation-based tourist destination driven by community empowerment. Our mission is to protect, conserve and preserve the Western Park and its World Heritage values for current and future generations in line with the standards laid down by UNESCO and the World Heritage Act, and to deliver benefits to communities living in and adjacent to the park by facilitating optimal tourism and related developments. If we move on, our high-level structure, we're a very flat organization. We're accountable, obviously, to the minister. We have a board, a chief executive officer, and four directorates run by the park operations director, business director, research, policy planning, senior manager, and the chief financial officer. We've given a snapshot of performance as at the third quarter here, and we have two key performance indicators that were all works in progress, one fell into park operations and the other one in commercialization of tourism. And 22 of our indicators are on target. So if we look at it in the next slide in the form of a pie chart, you'll see 92% is on target and 8% is work in progress. Moving on to the first program, conservation and park operations. The strategic objective is to ensure that the World Heritage values are conserved. If we look at the detection of poaching incidents within 2 weeks, we were on target both in quarter two and quarter three.
we, in the latter part of quarter B, deployed three new environmental monitors under the program that the department is running across the park. That funding continues until March, and we're hoping to be able to augment the funding in the new financial year. Detection of illegal developments within 48 hours. We were on target both in quarter two and three. Response to EIA again on target quarter two and three. If we look at the five environmental audits, our target for quarter three was one, and we had completed three by the first quarter. There was none required to be completed in the second quarter. We've completed four of the five, and the fifth one will be completed in the last quarter, so we'll achieve our target for the year. Alien clearing, we had set up 15,000 hectares, follow-up 500 initial and four wetlands. Both hectares are determined based on the available budget, and the budget has been consistent in the past few years. This particular year, we were able to source from other places as well, and we were able to increase the extent of this program. In quarter two, we cleared 8,421 hectares, and in quarter three, we cleared 16,125 hectares. Both of these figures were well ahead of the target, purely because of the additional funding that we were able to obtain. So the total for the year thus far is 37,172 hectares. So we've achieved in excess of the annual target. Moving on to the next slide. If we look at the annual game introduction, the management, the program, we've completed the program for the year. Well, introductions complete in the sort of middle of the year, more or less. What we have seen in the second and third quarter are additional interactions that were not anticipated as a consequence of the severity of the drought. The drought has in fact become much worse than we had anticipated during the planning phases. So what we are doing is moving rhino from the increased section of the park, which is particularly severely affected, to sections of the park where the impact of the drought is much less severe. Applications in the buffer zone action. Our target was 80%. We've been able to achieve 100%. This is largely a function of additional capacity that we've brought into the organization. And in the first quarter report, I don't know if the members recall, we spoke briefly about a restructuring exercise that we undertook as part of our human resource development strategy. That's also been able to augment the resources in this particular area of work. If we look at the implementation of the hydrological solution for Lake St. Lucia, the target was to complete the tender and award the tender, which had happened. We anticipate that the work will be completed in the first half of May 2016. The equipment is presently being customized for saltwater use. Due to the drought, freshwater use will in all likelihood not be an option. And we are trying to secure additional funding to be able to expand this work into the new financial year. The annual infrastructure program, we had set out to issue three tenders in the third quarter. We did issue those tenders. Two were awarded, the one failed. The total value of the tenders that were issued was 140 million rand. The tender that failed is currently being reconceptualized, and it will be advertised in the press this coming week. So we should be able to achieve the target we set, the annual target that we set for this particular intake. Moving on to the next program, which is transformation, and there the objective is to optimize empowerment activities in the park and improve in a manner that improves livelihoods of previously disadvantaged individuals. If we look at the creation of temporary jobs, we've created 1,354 jobs that far. Offer target, an annual target of 1,530. We were just under target in quarter three, but we do anticipate that we will achieve the annual target. And the target really, the lack of achievement was really a function of programming on the tenders that we had issued. Permanent jobs from park-related activities. Our annual target was set at 10. In the first quarter, we hadn't achieved our target, and that was where we raised and discussed the restructuring. The restructuring allowed us to create a number of support posts to support our human resource development strategy and also bring in a number of interns that were going to be terminated from the Khunsa Beta program. So what we've now done is actually appoint 15 additional posts, which is over target, but consistent with the new strategy and the organogram of the organization. This hasn't had any budgetary implications. Looking at the BEs, we have set a target of 50. One of the issues that the CEO will talk to is around the economic benefits. And so we saw a need here to reconceptualize the program to see how we could make the per unit cost lower to be able to increase and improve the reach of the program. So we've maintained 82 SMEs in this program. Our BEE procurement targets is set and given to us by DNR allocation letters. We have been able to overachieve both in the second and third quarters, largely as a function of the additional budget for land care. The land care work is allocated to 100% locally owned SMEs. Training, our target was 400 people. It was 100 in the third quarter. We've overachieved both in the second and the third quarters and against the annual. And that's also a function of the additional program, additional funding on land care, because all new contractors have to be trained in the techniques used for clearing, but also in dangerous game and programs like that. Moving on to program three, which is commercial. If we look at the indicators here, our revenue target for quarter three was 5.38 million. We achieved 5.5. We're sitting on a total for the year 14.3 million. The annual target is 16.1, and we anticipate that we will be able to achieve this in the last quarter. Generally, we pick up about 25% of our total revenue in the last quarter of the year. Looking at visitor numbers, the target was 178,257 for the third quarter. We came in at under that. We have cited the recession as a factor and the challenges that have been faced in the international tourism market. Having said that, Easter this year falls in the final quarter of the financial year, and we should be able to make the annual target. Implementation of the annual environmental education program. We have set a target of 2,700 for the year, 675 for the third quarter. We overachieved in the third quarter at 1,610, and we have overachieved for the year in general. This was really the consequence of an opportunistic action where we were offered funding in conjunction with various partners to the Kingsley Holgate Foundation to do a specific rhino awareness campaign. And that campaign really involved going from school to school and schools holding a rhino banner and walking around the park. At the same time, we piggyback our school awards program on that rhino awareness campaign. The school awards program runs in the second quarter of the year, and we aim the second and third quarters. We aim for a target of 40. I think there's a typo in my presentation there that I have to apologize for. We have reached 75. We did 30 in the second quarter and first in the remainder in the first quarter. And again, we've overachieved here because of the Zino awareness campaign. Moving on to the workshops and meetings, there was an internal decision to step up communication with the Land Claimants and Traditional Council. Some of that will be picked up and touched on by the CEO after me. So we overachieved for the year 23 from an annual target of 12, and we overachieved in the quarter. We did 10 workshops and campaigns instead of the 3 that we had projected. Looking at the communication program for groups other than communities, we use, and we specifically talked to news flashes. We had targeted 6 for the quarter. We achieved 10. This was to make up some of the backlogs in the first quarter. We're sitting on 19 at the moment. The annual target is 24, and we aim to achieve that in the last quarter. Moving on to corporate governance. If we look at the first two targets, they're both targets that are
achieved by July and August respectively, which is why there is nothing in the third quarter. So those were both on target in the second quarter and naturally both on target for year end. Moving on to staff retention rate, this was a subject of big debate at our first quarterly progress meeting. We have reviewed target for the new financial year and we brought it up to 90%, which is consistent with international best practice that tells us that somewhere between that companies should have an attrition rate somewhere between 10-15% to be able to wean out low performers and continuously refresh and improve the talent pool. And then the final indicator is quarterly reports. The target is one for the quarter. We achieved this. We've submitted our quota for the year thus far, and we will achieve this annual target. Moving very briefly on to the financial overview. Our accounting revenue for the period is 0.5% below budget, and this is largely a function of the recognition principles of Grant 23. The bulk of our commercial revenue, 65% of it, comes from access fees, and the remainder from license fees and charge. So we'll be on track for that. The park revenue has increased largely as a function of the restructuring of tariffs to include a 5 rand overnight levy. And the balance of the increase is due to inflationary increases which attach to the rates. Expenditure is below budget. It's attributable largely to the cost containment strategies. There is a surplus that's reflected for the period. This is a non-cash surplus, and it is a result of the accounting policies relating to grants, because you recognize the income, but the expenditure goes straight to the balance sheet on capital projects. I'm not going to talk to specific numbers, but if there are particular questions from the members, our CFO will respond in greater detail. Looking at the Auditor General matters, there was one finding in the Auditor General's report, which was around the completion of an IT governance framework. We have reported this is in process. It will be completed in the next week, also ahead of the financial year end. Looking at our staff demographics, I'm going to talk really to the summary at the bottom. The company is 71% African. It is 57% female. There is 59% management is 59% female. It is 46% African female, and it's 2% people with disabilities, and that's in a managing post. I'm now going to head over to our CEO.
Thank you. Honourable Members and colleagues, just to deal broadly with the issues that were raised, and today's chair was chairing that meeting, so he's updated on that portfolio committee visit. I want to bring it forward in three broad areas. I think the first thing is around communications. One of your critical challenges in Isi Magalisa, and I'm sure in many areas, is around managing perceptions. And at that portfolio committee visit, perceptions came across very strongly from some members of the public who were there. What we've done at Isi Magalisa is we clearly have intensified, we are intensifying our communication process, and we have also formed a TAR team and brought in other departments that are affected, including the Department of Environment, through the Department of Environment Assistance, they bring in Land Affairs or Land Reform, the Provincial Department of Environment and other key partners, so we can fix out any issues that have been raised and be able to respond, and also where necessary make the necessary improvements, because there always is room for improvement. The other issue I think is quite important linked to that is we're looking at concrete products. It is Isimangaliso in the new financial year will develop and negotiate its integrated management plan, which I think is a very important process because that's normally part-wide. The department's very involved with that, and that really puts down the vision and the framework and the interventions for the next 5 years. So I think that will be an important process we embark on in the new year. The other issue that always comes across strongly is issues around economic benefits. And I think one must looked at the area of the Smangalisa as the second poorest area in South Africa, with second greatest development backlogs, and now talking about the area outside the park. So 15% of people there are formerly employed, out of the 640,000 odd people live there. So there are huge economic benefits. You see, Mangalisa has delivered significantly. It now accounts for 6,900 tourism jobs, just under 7% of KZN's tourism GDP and 0.8% of South Africa's tourism GDP. But there's never enough when it comes to economic beneficiation, and specifically in the north of the park, where you've had the greatest backlogs. We struggle with budgets. We get an adequate budget from the department, so it's not a complaint. We get 20 to 25 billion rand a year. It's 8% of its coastline. So our process has been very much developing block by block as we get budgets, because you can't build a road there and a bridge there and not join it. The next phase of where we're going subject to budget cuts from government is into the north of the park. So there is huge opportunity now to deliver there, built on the tourism market being established. Our one critical area there is going to be the need to raise some funding for, and we're not asking this portfolio committee for that funding, although obviously wherever money comes from, you accept it, is funding for equity in lodges. Because while Isimangalisa has strongly delivered on infrastructure game, licenses for operators for day visit facilities, and there's been a very strong boom in tourism, there is a need to increasingly start focusing on lodges or tourism plants, which has very strong local empowerment in it. And we would like to look for money now that comes in as part equity, the rest of equity you raise in your tender to the private sector operators, but part of equity, because there's also a requirement on many of these facilities to be affordable for South Africans. So there's a model there that we're developing, and what excites us about that model is if we get it right in Simangaliso, it might be applicable for other parts. So we're even looking at existing, let's call them government rest camps, traditional government rest camps that can be redeveloped in a similar market where they have public access, but you bring in community equity. And if we can get that right in Isimangaliso, and I'm not saying it's what's happened through there, but for example, Skopuza could be an example of what could also happen. So the economic situation is probably our most difficult area to deal with, because it's around money, and money is getting tight. But strong drive. On the issue of access that was raised, we've looked at it very carefully. In Isimangaliso, there are 17 or 18 sites that the public can access the beaches. A large portion of those sites have free access, but we haven't stood idle. We finished an EIA, Environmental Impact Assessment for Sedwana Bay, and it's sitting for the Department for an RRB. If that's passed and that project happens, it significantly improves facilities at Sedwana Bay for all members of the public and improves access. We've also looked very carefully at what we call the St. Lucia Estuary Precinct, because there we have four or five access points to beaches plus all of the places on the river. And we're in the process now of the department is there going today to put in an EIA application to upgrade those. Now the importance of upgrading those, it is actually good access to Mangalisa, has actually improved dramatically since national's involvement. But people always feel it's needs for better access, specifically the 4x4 ban, because they can't drive on the beaches. So it depends who's raising what issue, but we regardless want to improve access. So what's important about that is it also improves facilities for the town of St. Lucia. And the town of St. Lucia is a very important economic hub in that region and a big employer. So you're dealing with two or three things. So I think at a broad level, those are the three areas. One was the communication and perceptions and dealing with that. The second area was access, and the third area was economic benefits. And we also are extending to what we call the north of the park to do a local area plan, which is a much more detailed little plan, which is more bottom-up barefoot planning, if you want to call it that, which residents in the area, which also look at these development sites for economic beneficiation and improving of access points there. So there is a lot of work being done. Some of it already come to fruition. There's room for improvement, and there will be products that are already in our business plan for next year that directly deal with some of the issues that were raised. Thank you.
Did all of you have plenty of time to talk to the report to make additions, including the voices of those who haven't had, like that of Shoni Sani and so on? So anyone has got some time to can say a point or two, unless people are still becoming familiar with this order.
Thank you. Thank you, all of the members. I think the report was presented very well. and I can confirm from the department, because we do quarterly reviews and analysis of the reports from the entities, and certainly we the state of the report is acceptable to our standards in respect of the performance plan of Simangali. So over and above that, we normally make an assessment of governance, and they have a system of compliance that is acceptable, and that also is reflected in the Auditor General's report. So, all of the members, I think the areas of challenge as outlined by the CEO also now, there is more that can be done, of course, depending on resources that are available. And currently, the revised allocations to Simangaliso and other entities in the department have also been further reduced. So it is likely that our target, when we present to the committee, the APPs for the future, those targets will also be revised somewhat, a little bit downwards. Of course, we've been asked to do more with less, so we'll try and stretch as far as possible within the existing human resources as possible. But there are consumables and other aspects that still require that we have some financial resources to meet our commitments. So I don't have further to add, and the board, as you know, is still a fairly new board, and that the minister is still supposed to meet formally and introduce also some of the proposals around governance that are flowing from the Minister of Finance and the Presidential Review report recommendations. So I think on that note, from a biodiversity status, barring the drought conditions, I think it's still a park and a heritage site that we can be proud of as a country. And I think from a liquidity point of view, it's also an institution that we are not worried much about in respect of it going bankrupt, and it's also well managed in respect of controlling the limited resources that that are available to it. So I'll hand over to Shoni and.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, DG, and colleague. So to make comments on three key aspects. Firstly, to underscore what the CEO, the DG indicated, I think the CEO went on in detail on some of the key issues that were raised previously. I think part of those were what the portfolio committee may have raised on the site visit to confirm that we are part of the task team as here, playing our active role in that process, and as the CEO indicated, bringing other key role players as in departments that are affected and the province to resolve those issues, which the CEO categorized into five categories. It is related to perceptions, improvement in terms of communication, access-related issues, beneficiation, and also other infrastructure-related matters. We understand that some of these challenges would require short-term interventions, some medium-term, some long-term, but there is a process that we are confident will be able to move us from where we are to ensure that we address these issues. The second issue I wanted to highlight is that the Simangaliso is a World Heritage Site, and there are certain tenets or certain characteristics that would have to be maintained to make sure that we comply to the requirements of its inscription. And therefore, that is one area that we're looking at, and we are satisfied with the fact that the management supports and ensures that those key tenants are not compromised. As a natural heritage site, residency site with natural features, those key features are looked after properly. Of course, with other socio-economic benefits and tourism potential, which is so high, that presents this Magaliso as one of the models that in some areas I think could be replicated somewhere. The last aspect is in relation to the current challenge of drought. We had, of course, interacted with our institutions and other provincial authorities in assuring that their drought plans are updated and they are implemented. And this Magaliso is one of the entities that has presented that. It's one area that presents its economic and home challenges that would require a lot more in terms of focus. And we are hopeful that the situation will improve in terms of the rainfall. Otherwise, there may still be further challenges associated with drought that they would also have to confront and deal with in short and also in the medium term. Thank you.
Colleagues, at this point, we'll need to engage in some discussions, getting more clarity or making much that will assist this entity to improve its own operations, because it cannot always be that we're just bombarding them with questions and all that. But where possible, let's suggest what should work better. And so may I allow you, even before I make my own remarks or questions, over to you, members, Honorable Kekana and then Honorable Mavila.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is only just to want to understand the challenges of drought. Is it only the rain affected among the big five animals? Thank you. I just want to understand.
No, thank you,
Quota 3 really interested in terms of transformation. Transformation is not static, it's ongoing, it's a process, it's not an event. So we want you to elaborate more in terms of transformation. That's the first thing. I take it from the first slide that you're saying you are on track in terms of price. In the second quarter, give us now what is the actual state of affairs. Because in terms of transformation, you can progress or you can regress. Give us what is the status around that. That's the first one. Secondly, I know you have responded to this question in the past around the detection of poaching incidents within 2 weeks. And you have had a lengthy discussion around it to say, then your target is 2 weeks. The carcass would have been chowed by the scavengers already. Understand it, but you are on target. You are talking about 30 monitors deployed to various sections of the park. But you are not elaborating as to what are the findings. Were there attempts for poaching? We don't want to take things for granted. Were there attempts for poaching, no poaching, stretch movements? You started the attempts. Give us more flesh to that. Because it doesn't tell us anything. The same will go with the 48 hours detention of legal developments. I know in the past, last year, you have reported your interventions around some of the illegal developments. But you are on target according to your report, 48 hours. But what is the actual? What are the actual developments? Whether there are attempts, you have abolished them or what? Give us a sense. So that you must not just say 40. We don't know what is that going. This will go as well with your age. 100% is good. But provide us with with information. Five applications were submitted, five were approved. Let's get the figures and have the census to quantify. That will be around your target there. In terms of the same page, completion of annual game management program, say quota 3 nil off takes for introductions. And then you talk about quota 2, 3 rhinos, quota 3, 7 rhinos. Unanticipated translocation, blah, 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 blah. What were the actual target that you are looking at for the rhinos? How many rhinos? That's the exact information. Okay, this one is more technical. I understand we'll bear with you around the projections that were made around your hydrological solution for St. Lucia estuary, that your sand was more expensive than expected. It will deal with the projection, the estimation, whether we were off the mark or far. I know that one is, you can't really put a whole, understand it, but if you can briefly just comment on that. And then lastly, it will go to the maintained visitor numbers at prior year, blah, blah. You see, the problem is your sites are not numbered. We know you are a different entity from Sun Park, but Sun Park is also a program for learners, for students to access the facility. I don't get it here, except students participating at competition level. We also have that program where students can go on free so that they have got access to funds. But I'm not saying it here, you are just talking about the awards given to the school 75. Lastly, it will around your staff personnel. What is the percentage? Your personnel staff versus non-personnel. Let me get the ratio. What is it? 100% staff personnel cost is so much. What is the ratio? 40 to 30, 70 to 30. Let me just have a sense. And lastly, your natural attrition. I see you are maintaining, you are good at maintaining your staff retention. It's 80%. This is my last one, Chair. But what is the natural attrition? Because I think that we are able to compare that 80% of staff retention vis-à-vis the natural attrition. Thanks, Honorable Chair, for the opportunity.
Thanks, members. Firstly, let me thank Isimangaliso for your presentation, particularly because indicating and something that was confirmed by the department that you 92% on target on the issues that were reported on, and only 8% are issues which are work in progress. And your attempt to deal with the issues as raised during our last visit, issues of communication, as you indicated, issues of empowerment or economic empowerment, issues of access and all of that. I think that's great. We'll be able to make a follow-up as we come, because we're still owing you another visit, which we wanted to come. It couldn't work out, unfortunately, but it's still within our own program and understanding that we do need to come for a longer period than we have done. Both your vision and mission speaks a lot, particularly to issues of transformation and empowerment. Let me indicate that what you're saying in part of your vision says you're driven by community empowerment. And that it's a loaded statement. It's a loaded statement, and we just want to believe that you live up to that vision, which is an ideal one. But your mission as well says, and to deliver benefits to communities living in and adjacent to the park. So it's a statement that both the CEO and business director at all given times should be ringing in our minds, that even as people raise issues around economic empowerment and so on, they may be taking them from your own mission and not just raising them to coincide with the vision and the mission, but it may be that they know that that's what you have set yourself to achieve. Now, in terms of your targets, there's one that talks to clearance, the one on hectares, remember that one. You're saying to us that it's dependent, and I'm not arguing that point. I want you to run with murder. You know, you say it's dependent on the budget. So the number of hectares there are not in terms of what the actual challenge is. It's what your capacity to deal with the challenge financially is like. Are you able to tell what could be the challenge? What are you facing? You know, if you get what I'm raising, what are you dealing with? If you were to have all the money, what is it that you needed? How much? And so what sort of challenges you dealing with? The second one, there's one where you're raising the tender that failed. You're not going into the details of how it failed, but you're saying the reissue will be done shortly. Now, what sort of assurance can we have that the reissue will not fail? Will you have attended to the factors that caused the initial one to fail? What were the factors so that we are comfortable that you will be able to handle that and deal with it? Of course, you're talking the issues of the drought and all that. The drought itself is a problem. I know that to other people, DG, it may not make sense when you talk drought when you are alongside the sea. Like, it's not really easy to understand, but yes, there can be drought in an existing area. It's not like you don't have challenges when you are there. But we just hope that the drought will go at some point. I don't think there's much we can do about it. I don't think so. Lastly, in terms of the staff complement, it happens to be the most soft target when we have to cut owing to the challenges financially and so on. But what is the vacancy rate that we've got? What sort of critical positions that you needed to fill if you needed to do that? Or if you are satisfied you don't have challenges, you may say so. Over to you. Thanks.
Honourable Chair, I'll deal with the first question draft and then our business director will go to some other questions we can add in. The drought affected most of the country, but just look specifically at East Mangaliso, and now I want to discuss the region, because not an island. We have the lowest rainfall year in 65 years. And we had, the last drought was from 2002 to 2012, so we barely came out of the last drought before this one came in. And in the drought, inevitably you get no rain, you get less rain. And the critical issue is how many years in a row you get low rain. So although this is the lowest rainfall year in 65 years, there's a big question about what happens next year. To specifically address outside the park, you had, and I use this word, reservedly a catastrophe, because your water delivery for potable water for communities was already stretched and stressed. We have 6 local municipalities, many of them are under special management, and there are huge community water issues around the park. Outside the park, you had significant service delivery protests outside the park. And here I'm talking about the greater Umkhonyokuri region that what I'm repeating now is widely reported in the media. So it's been a big mobilization issue. With local government elections coming, there's increased potential mobilization. And clearly this plays impact on how you're managing a park, because you're a big neighbour, and goes to some of the issues that the portfolio committee picked up when they came to visit us. It's not purely a park issue. And that's where we have to involve. So where Issue Margarita can assist, it clearly assists. Inside the park, we learned a lot from the last drought, and we had already made some significant management improvements with boreholes, auxiliary boreholes for tourism facilities, and those kind of things. But to answer the question, what happens in a drought like this is your browsers are affected. And your browsers aren't just white rhino. They're things like buffalo, elephants, your bulb grazers. And like the cattle outside the park, when you've had many, many cattle dying, inside these parks you start being stressed. Now, a drought in the Delta is not a bad thing for conservation because it's part of a natural cycle. And it's actually, and I don't like this expression, but when he speaks to the game ranger in a uniform, he said, it kills the young and the sick and the old. And then when the rain comes, things come back more aggressively and they're more healthy. And that's how the conservationists like to put it. The question is, you must make sure when you go into a drought that there is not overgrazing and you don't have too many animals while the drought on, because then the vegetation also has a negative impact and the vegetation doesn't need to recover. So Issue Margarita this year did gain off takes early, and things like rhino, which will be dealt with by the business manager, the rhino that we've been moving on off takes from the park, they're actually rhinos we're moving from sections of the park where we've got water problems and there's grass problems, moving into another section of the park where there's place for rhinos. Because this year, you've got to pick up, not just in Issue Margarita, but in a lot of parks around South Africa, mortalities of rhino from the drought. And that's part of the natural system. Your hippo are also badly affected. I'm going into a little bit of detail. Your browsers, like a black rhino or a nyala, are less affected because the trees take longer to be impacted on. In terms of Lake St. Lucia, which is worth spending some time on, Lake St. Lucia is very important, not just because of UNESCO thinks it's important, but it makes up 50% of South Africa's estuarine ecosystem. 50%, and 80% of KwaZulu-Natal. So it's that significant. It's like the economy of Gauteng in conservation terms. And what's happened in this drought, because of previous management and brief support of the committee before, what we've changed is the lake haven't been getting water from the Umbulozi River because there was dredging in the past. And we are in the process of Issue Margarita with the department and the Global Environmental Facility, and it was reported on by the business director, of implementing South Africa's biggest rehabilitation project, Sydney's biggest wetland rehabilitation project, which is getting the Umfolozi River to flow as naturally back into Lake St. Lucia. And that process is ongoing. So when the DDG spoke about interventions for the drought, we have submitted to DEA and to the province short, what we call short-term interventions. If it continues, it might be fodder, it might be water holes, but we've also put forward what we're doing for Lake St. Lucia, because Lake St. Lucia and the water is a short-term intervention, because if that river flowed again, because it hasn't been flowing, we get water into the lake. And then obviously in the medium term, the intervention will mean if the drought continues, the lake will be a more healthy place. Now, when we talk about the size of Lake St. Lucia, it's about 90 kilometers long, a system, 22 kilometers wide, at its widest point. So that's the same as Johannesburg to Pretoria and halfway back in length. You need the size of this lake. At the moment, it's sitting at 15% surface water. So 85% of the lake surface has no water. Now, the importance of healthy Lake St. Lucia goes a little bit to today's chair's comments about beneficiation and communities. Is Lake St. Lucia is important globally because of what occurs there and what the DG says. It's also important nationally because the fish come from the sea into Lake St. Lucia, and it's a nursery. They grow up and they go back up to sea, and things like the prawn industry and the longline fishery, this is the place that supplies the East Coast with its fish. So it's very important economically. And then when you bring it down to a local level, about 70% of the 50,000 families who live around Lake St. Lucia, sorry, the 15,000 families, use resources heavily. So when the resources are healthy, people have a higher quality of life. When the resources aren't healthy, people don't have a quality of life. So it's a very interesting way, and I'm partly answering a little bit the comment was made by our chair today, the last chair, is Lake St. Lucia has global significance and relevance. It also has local relevance. And the challenge is you have to improve the resilience of the lake and its environment ecologically, and at the same time you have to improve people's resilience, that is their ability to deal with change. And that's the balance that the entity and the department is always facing and trying to find that balance, and that's the trick. So there was a long answer to that, but at some point it would be very useful to give the Portfolio Committee a briefing on the Lake St. Lucie Hydrology Project, but it's a very exciting project, and it's going to be huge delivery. And it's been largely funded from money that we raised from the Global Environmental Facility through the World Bank. There's very little money actually coming from South African taxpayers. That's not a compact. There is some. But it just shows it's not, you know, it's not on the books, so to speak, of the taxpayers. But it's all that has huge benefits for South Africa. If I can ask the business director to continue, we will come in the video when we need to.
I'm going to start the transformation question, but I may not have understood it correctly. So if I haven't answered, please just come back to me. So, and I'm assuming you're talking about internal transformation. We started the baseline figures that I put in the demographics indicate the prior year. So we've had improvements in the percentage African in the organization. We've had a slight drop in percentage female. We've had a 1% drop in percentage female in management, and we've had an improvement in percentages of people with disabilities. In terms of our, I'm going to try to cluster maybe all the personnel related questions in one. In terms of our budget, we spend 15% of our budget on personnel costs. The rest all goes to operations, and 15 is 1/5. If we look at our staffing, I would say we probably have 5 posts that we would like to fill that would significantly improve our delivery. But we're making do with the resources that we have at the moment. I might jump around a little bit. If we look at did I adequately respond to the question? If we look at the detection of poaching in 2 weeks, we had 3 incidents that were reported in the third quarter. All of those had proceeded to criminal action. In terms of illegal developments, we had 2 in the third quarter, 6 for the year. What we found with the illegal developments or the unauthorized developments is an increased level of voluntary compliance. Because there's been some good awareness around that, we're finding that people are coming to us and having conversations first before they proceed. And a lot of what we have here is also people in certain sections of the park where we don't have fencing, people not understanding where the boundary of the park actually is. The EIAs, we had 21 applications and 26 internal scopings that we processed. To explain the internal scoping, because this is a World Heritage Site, our policy is to take it a step further. So in instances where the EIA regulations don't trigger a basic assessment or an EIA, we still have the requirement of an internal scoping to make sure that we're mitigating any possible environmental impact. In terms of the projection estimation on the work on the restoration project, we retained, before we go out to projects like that or infrastructure projects, we retain engineers who do costing. And the technology we have scoped and based the pricing on, in effect, turned out to be much more expensive than the engineer's pricing. So what we then did is, with the permission of the World Bank, we made it a much more loose proposal. We didn't specify the method. We specified what we needed done and the available budget. So what the people then competed on was a per unit cost for the removal of the spoil. And the technique that's worked out to be the cheapest is the same technique that's been used to rehabilitate the mine dumps. We used to pelt the land with lots of water, create a slurry, and then pump away. And that's come in at considerably less than the first set of proposals that we had. In terms of visitor numbers, we have, and I think this might talk to the school's question, a big equitable access program. So if you come from a school and it's a school with inadequate or poor resources, our motivation from the headmaster to free entry. And we always provide a guide so that the children get interpretation. If it's a well-heeled school, let's say a private school from our country, there's an automatic school discount of 50% on a rate. Then looking, I didn't respond to natural attrition, sorry. We have had two resignations this year, but we've had two appointments, so it will reflect it as a net zero. Looking at the annual introductions and off-tax, 9 introductions, 510 off-tax. The alien clearing challenge is which we concentrate our efforts at this stage on 3 sections of the park. And what happens with alien clearing is as your infestation drops, you can scope bigger and bigger areas for the same money. So to an extent, we can shift money to expand the level of clearing. But I would guess we are probably treating a third of the problem. And we would certainly need to expand it to sections that we haven't been in before and also expand it in areas where we are currently working.
Listen, just coming there. On alien clearing, there is not enough budget available to do the whole park. And it's always been a challenge we've got. In the early days, and almost predates us, I think some of the scoping was not problematic, but they went to the areas of most infestation. The challenge is that sections of the park had low infestation, but maybe they're the sections you should be doing because then you can still prevent it. We've all had new types of aliens emerging. The one is called Parthenium. It's been nicknamed Famine Weed. Guy Preston likes that name, and that's been marching south, 20 or 30 kilometers a year. Our challenge now is that you've got it outside the park, and when it's coming into the park, it requires a different type of approach. You need a team on 24-hour standby for the whole year. It just deals where it comes up, because the aliens you've got that are established on blocks, so you can do that situated block by block, and it decreases. So if alien clearing budgets, it wouldn't just be Ismangaliso, because the budget cuts in government are decreased, it does provide a huge challenge for the environment, specifically in parks. And once aliens get out of control, they become much more expensive. It's not impossible to bring back under control. The other thing linked to alien program is it's been a huge beneficiation program for communities, because the work is done by SMMEs, small contractors, and employs employ local people and all the proportions. So for people, survival strategies has been hugely important. So if it does get reduced, then it also has an impact on people living around the park. So it's an ecological, and they're resilient thing. It's ecological. Aliens take up more water, for example, in the drought than natural vegetation does. So it's a big area, just has come in. The other thing that Terry has asked, and I shall continue, wasn't it just the tender that was reissued and awarded, was a tender that failed, and that we are reissuing, which I'm sure she'll deal with.
Sorry, to talk to the tender that failed and reissued, in the first iteration, we issued a big tender across the whole park for a 9 GB compactor, and that reduces 9 GB is a construction industry board rating that is given to contractors, and it's a reflection of their financial capacity and also skills ability to deliver a project like that. And that automatically reduces the pool of available contractors. So what we have now done is we've taken that big project and we've split it, and we've made it into smaller clusters, which will expand the number of potential bidders. A lot of the 9 GB contractors came to the site visit. In fact, they all came to the site visit, but then it emerged that they had many competing contracts elsewhere, and they weren't convinced that they would be able to meet the program requirements. The tender that we did receive, we felt was too weak, and it in fact failed the adjudication, and it's conditional, so we weren't able to award. So we do believe that we've attended to the factors that caused the tender to fail.
Members, are you satisfied that all the questions were responded to?
In the page, yeah, I am satisfied. Just out of interest with them, what are the figures that they are supporting us? Because you said that some of the budgets don't come from the DEA, Department of Environment Affairs, from the World Bank. Except the World Bank, what other international agencies are assisting us, given the fact that UNESCO has declared it an international heritage site. So just give us first the wooden figures, if it is possible, and other international agencies that are assisting. But fairly well, I think the questions that I posed were fairly responded to, and I'm satisfied. Thanks.
If I may, the World Bank grant is $9 million. And I think the landmark thing about this particular World Bank grant, because it came from the Global Environmental Facility and they've routed it via the World Bank, is that it's the first grant they've issued that has a capacity building component. Usually they just go for the complete green set. So it's a $9 million program. It is the only international funder we have at this stage.
Honourable members, the Global Environmental Facility has got agencies that it uses to facilitate the transfer of funds or the facilitation of the implementation. And the World Bank, the UNEP, United Environmental Program, as well as the UNDP, which is the UN National Development Agency. And then recently we have, as South Africa, also submitted an accreditation of a national implementing agency, like the DBSA, which is the Development Bank of Southern Africa. So that's why, so the funds are not necessarily from the World Bank. They are more the executing agency on behalf of a Global Environmental Facility. And they're also the trustee for the GEF. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks a lot. You see, the Berlin species seems to outsmart the human species in terms of how aggressive and how stubborn they are. If we treat him only one third of that, all it means is that the backlog will remain forever and ever. Amen. We may not be able to really deal with that. Worse, when we see that this challenge also, we already seen some outside of the party threatening to come in. And now all you can do is to try and fight them, get human soldiers inside the park to defend the species from outside where they sort of where they are. Ugly heads, you try and shoot every day, 24 hours. I think it's a hell of a challenge. It's a hell of a challenge. I'm not sure if we will ever win in that regard, particularly if the fighting would be like that. Because to me, and it's now no longer the challenge of the park, I think it's a challenge for the department and the country. Because we may as well need to kill this even before they enter the park, right from outside. The park, because it's the park and we've got access to other funding revenues or avenues, it's easier to try and protect the park itself, which is the pride of the nation, of course, we agree. But I'm just saying we have a bigger problem. To which we must find a solution. The second part, as the department, I think there's a lot to learn from Ismangalisa in terms of how we manage other parks across the country with regards to community equity, engagement, community benefit, economic benefit, issues of transformation and so on. I think there's a lot that other parts may be advised to learn some of the experiences or best practices from East Mangalis in terms of their own module. It may not be perfect, but I think they've worked out something out of the circumstances they find themselves in. So they have had to dig out to the extent that something, some product is emerging. Now, we must learn from that as a country. It can't be that East Mangalis is having it sort of right, and I'm not saying that right. There are still challenges even with that kind of a process and so on, which may still be improved. I'm saying there are other people, other facilities that are at a zero level. They haven't started anything. They're still looking at communities with some attitudes and so on. The community are still looking at those attacks with some attitudes and so on. There's just a lot that is going on. There's a lot of tension which is not being broken or being confronted and dealt with. So I'm saying this Mangalis must remain open in terms of receiving those people who may learn from you to share your kind of challenges and experiences that you have had or had so far, you know, so that they can not reinvent the wheel. Well, of course, it's always good to work out the solution out of your own circumstances, but it's good to learn from what human beings elsewhere have already transgressed and so on. The other way, happy to hear that the department is looking at both short-term and long-term interventions. It may be with regard to drought and other challenges, just to ensure that the facility, the entity, it's viable, it's sustainable in the long run. That is interesting to hear. Would want to be kept posted from time to time in terms of what is happening, are we winning, whatever, in terms of those interventions. They might not have given fruition as yet, but I hope soon and very soon we will learn from that. You know, these kind of interactions assist the members, both in terms of us being aware of the kind of challenges that you're dealing with on a day-to-day basis, but also we remain or get empowered in terms of knowledge of what is happening on the ground, equal for us to be able to take informed decisions, including in terms of where money should go. You know, if we are to vote for any money bills, we must know what we're doing. You know, because if we don't understand the kind of challenges, we'll not see the need why should even get more money. We'll say, no, it's Mangalis, it's fine, people are paying as they enter, raising, whatever. Well, that is nothing compared to the bigger challenge that you're facing. So all I'm saying, these kind of interactions, amongst other things, other than you just accounting to members of parliament, it assists members to understand the bigger picture that you're dealing with. Where should we assist? What our role, other than just oversighting you, should be? So this is always very useful. If we don't have much, DG, if you don't have anything else to say, we may be about to conclude business, but let's hear from you if you still have anything to say, or both of you, both. I may even start with the business director, the CEO, the DG, so that we conclude the properly. So I think the members are satisfied that I don't have anything anymore. Over to you.
No, I think maybe from my part, just to say thank you for the inputs and the guidance.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. Just in terms of your reflections, I think we appreciate your reflections, both in terms of the challenges at hand, especially as it relates to the invasive plants spread in the country, And certainly, you are right, Chair, when you say that because the invasions can be aggressive, that is as a result of the fact that those species do not have natural enemies in the ecosystems in South Africa, and therefore tend to outcompete our indigenous plants and even in some instances fish. And that's why part of acknowledging that with the budget that we have and the level of infestations that already exist, and acknowledging the rate of spread per annum, we have opted to also look at we're using mechanical means because we have to deal with the issues of labor intensiveness and dog creation, but also at the same time we're looking at other scientific methods which relate to biological control, wherein we introduce a natural element to the plant, if it's a plant, that then would help to slow down the growth and eat that plant away over time. So if, for instance, you control the spread of seeds, if you're talking about acacia or what is called leguazo, you then limit the spread. If you are then dealing with, you introduce a biological control that would make sure that the pollination does not happen, and therefore the other plant would not necessarily spread. And in some instances, we still need some of these invading plants, especially the woody ones, for our other commercial activities. That's why we have commercial forestry in the country. But now, in terms of the invasive regulations that have been passed through the biodiversity legislation, we then can control where you plant away from river courses and also in limited sensitive areas, which is why, for instance, we are not hearing jacaranda trees in Pretoria, on the streets of Pretoria, because they are not in water courses, but we would not necessarily allow them to be now planted very close to water courses. So that national challenge, I think we are attending to, but there may be other innovations that we can explore as a country. Then the other, I think, the compliment, Honorable Chair, also we accept the compliment that Simangaliso is doing fairly well compared to a number of our other protected areas, whether they are managed provincially or even in comparison with some of our national parks. There is a lot of best practice that can be shared, and you will be happy, Honorable Members, to know that we have undertaken, I think, 3-4 years ago, what we referred to as a protected area management effectiveness assessment. So we're assessing all protected areas, whether they're managed by province or national authorities, which included Isimangaliso and Sandpass, and certainly that study confirmed at least greater effectiveness in the methodologies applied in Isimangaliso. So there is then evidence that confirms your own assessment. And over and above that, I think in terms of expanding best practice, we have what is referred to as People and Parks Program, which is anchored on the core management principles, which I can also report that we had mixed successes in implementation, both when you compare national parks and provincial parks. And this is the context of very much of the land claims in protected areas. And as you may appreciate, that Isimangaliso had quite a significant number of land claims, which is why their model of running the park has always also been about taking into account some of the needs of the communities around the park. And of course, there has been a few challenges here and there, but we think that the approach that is being employed is yielding positive results, honourable member. So thank you very much for your comments, and I think we take home some of the observations that you've made. Thanks.
Thanks, DJ. Thanks, all of your members and officials, and all of you who happen to be in this room having participated, whether silently or by way of just your mere presence. That's highly appreciated. We know that it has been a day that is successful in our regard, in our own considered view. We would like to, as we conclude, also take note of the apologies received, just to ensure that all of those have been well received, both from the deputy minister and the minister and all the opposition parties members. I will not allow us to proceed to dealing with the minutes of the previous sitting of the portfolio committee, looking at our numbers and all of that, so that we do consider those in the next meeting of the portfolio committee, which is next Tuesday. I will then just say that lastly, that in as much as Andrew, you're saying that drought is a positive thing in ecological terms. Be careful where you say it. You know, very interesting. I understand you, but I'm just saying it takes a lot to get our members to understand, our people to understand that drought can be a positive thing. You know, it's not something that is so easy to accept. So I just don't want you to land in some trouble elsewhere because you think you are conservationist activist, because you may die for that.
See, if I can record, if I'm standing up in my area, the first thing I always say, this morning I also passed in the fact. Which is true. But I've often, without drinking water myself, I have books.
Okay. That's to the extent that we need to acknowledge the challenge that is there and what our people are facing. But I understand the spirit in which you're raising it, and that anything happens for a reason. So the very drought brings about certain developments and so on and so on, which may be positive. But I don't think many of our people want to hear that. You know. Yes, that's just on a lighter note. Thanks a lot. Travel safely. Enjoy your day beyond this meeting. Happy to have seen you again. Meeting you in future as we continue to do the good work. Thanks a lot. You keep well. Okay.